It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Summer, not over yet. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Yeah, hold on a bit, fall foliage. We've got temperatures tickling the middle 80s in some spots today, but it will come with a price. Stormy weather in the offering. Scattered showers and thunderstorms this afternoon could produce some locally heavy downpours. America remembers today, 18 years since 9/11. President Trump speaking this morning at the Pentagon. He said 9/11 is seared into the soul of America.
It was a day filled with shock, horror, sorrow, and righteous fury.
Somber ceremonies held New York City, the Pentagon, and at the Flight 93 Memorial in Pennsylvania.
Feels like a long time ago in a lot of respects, but it also feels it's still a fresh wound that hasn't gone away.
Like any loss, it changes form. It's still unbelievable that it ever happened.
Just remembering back to that day. It's a hard day for everyone.
It feels like yesterday. It feels like 100 years ago. It's an interesting mix. There aren't many days that go by we don't think about it.
It's hard to believe that it is 18 years and our lives changed forever.
Some of you weighing in today, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani.
It's the saddest day and it's the happiest day because there was so much bravery. America was at its best.
Giuliani, a guest on Fox and Friends this morning.
We were ready for it. Never anticipated airplanes being used as missiles.
Karl Rove was the chief of staff to then-President George W. Bush. He explains why 9/11 was truly a global event.
When those towers were struck, the entire Western civilization had been struck.
At the 9/11 Memorial in New York City, the names of those who died were read aloud today.
Gary M. Albero.
John Leslie Albert.
Peter Craig.
And a new memorial in Lower Manhattan honors those who've died since 9/11.
18 years after the terror attacks, names are still being etched in memorials. Toxic World Trade Center dust lodged in tissue like a ticking time bomb. Cancer is exploding.
We've seen things like prostate cancer, thyroid cancer.
Dr. Michael Crane is head of the World Trade Center Health Clinic at Mount Sinai, where they monitor 76,000 responders. He says 400,000 people who lived and worked in Lower Manhattan should also be checked annually. Sean Adams at the World Trade Center.
Other news today, Republicans celebrating two big wins in the state of North Carolina. The state's 9th and 3rd congressional districts will stay under GOP control after special elections last night.
The voters said no to the radical liberal policies being pushed by today's Democratic Party.
That's Republican Dan Bishop, who defeated Democrat Dan McCready in the 9th congressional district race. Political pundit Leonard Steinhorn.
The Republicans have held this congressional district seat since 1963. Donald Trump won the congressional district by 12 points in 2016.
And in North Carolina's other special election, Republican Greg Murphy defeated his Democratic challenger by 20 points. President Trump's begun his search for a fourth national security advisor after the firing yesterday of John Bolton. White House spokesman Hogan Gidley.
There is no one issue here. They just didn't align on many issues. That's why we are where we are.
Kentucky Senator Rand Paul says Bolton was a warmonger.
The threat of war around the world is greatly diminished with Bolton out of the White House.
Bolton and the president disagreed on issues ranging from Afghanistan to North Korea to Iran. Senate debate over gun control is underway on Capitol Hill.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says Republicans are waiting for President Trump to indicate what he would support in the way of gun legislation, criticizing Democrats' demands that he take up the House-passed H.R. 8 bill on background checks.
All of this is theatrics.
To which Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer replied,
"Shame on him. There are people who died Shame on him.
Bill Rakoff, Capitol Hill.
New England Patriots wide receiver Antonio Brown is fighting allegations of assault. These charges come from a former trainer who says Brown attacked her three times over 2 years. The NFL's looking into it. Reporter Jerika Duncan.
Brown is not facing any criminal charges. This is a civil case against him for more than $75,000 in damages. His accuser, Brittany Taylor, says the two met in college at Bible study.
Brown's former coach, John Gruden, has some advice for the New England Patriots as they embark on the AB era.
You know, we gave it a shot, and now New England gets their turn. Good luck to them. But I can't deal with it anymore, really.
The Oakland Raiders releasing Brown following a string of off-field antics. He is expected to attend his first practice today with the New England Patriots. California lawmakers considering a bill that would allow college athletes to get paid while in school for endorsement deals. Former Stanford University volleyball player Haley Hudson.
The NCAA has gotten away with being able to exploit the media rights of student athletes, and they generate billions of dollars in revenue from an unpaid labor force.
The legislation would prohibit colleges and universities in California from revoking scholarships for athletes who profit off their own name, image, or likeness. The NCAA may ban all California teams from competing in national championships if this legislative effort is successful. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and we're checking the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania next. New York school children observed a moment of silence this morning in honor of the lives lost on 9/11, 18 years ago. From now on, 9/11 will be known as Remembrance Day in the classroom. It's meant to encourage dialogue and education in the classroom. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
We honor the people we lost, and we have a never again mentality that we're never going to let terrorists be able to attack us again.
Governor Cuomo says this is important to preserve 9/11 history so future generations have an understanding of what transpired the morning of September 11th, 2001. This student couldn't agree more.
It's a very powerful time. Those who were not even born are now in college, and they are living and they have no memory of it themselves. So it's our duty to help continue the legacy of the remembering of the attacks.
Hard to believe, but soon there will be no students in the high school setting who were alive at the time of the terrorist attacks. The Pennsylvania Board of Pardons will hear pleas for commutation this coming Friday from nearly two dozen inmates. These are inmates serving life sentences. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman thinks they deserve a second chance.
I think that there's a line that we as a society need to determine is what's justice and what's vengeance. How much is enough? Is 25 years enough? Is 30 years enough? And I would submit that that's way too much. And I think we in Pennsylvania can and should do better.
But victims' rights advocate Jennifer Storm says restorative justice has its limits.
Certainly we don't oppose the process. We just always want to make sure, obviously, that victims' voices are heard, that they have that ability to come forward, and that we have the opportunity to make sure that they can be heard.
Governor Wolf has commuted the life sentences of at least six Pennsylvania inmates within the past 8 months. New York is taking action against opioid makers. The governor says taxpayers overpaid $2 billion in insurance premiums for the painkillers. The State Department of Financial Services says it will impose hefty fines against the pharmaceutical industry in light of these revelations. New York education officials are reporting an increase in the number of no-cost tuition scholarships for SUNY students. That story new at noon from Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Yeah, there was a 20% increase in Excelsior scholarships from the 2018-2019 academic year to this academic year. About 24,000 students were awarded the scholarship this school year, which is less than 3% of estimated eligible households. Students must live and work in state for the same number of years after graduation as they receive the scholarship while in school. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. This is the first year where early voting will be allowed in New York. Local Board of Elections are gearing up for the change, which allows voters to cast ballots 10 days before an election.
This was kind of thrown on our plate in early in the year to get done. So now what we've got to do is implement our plan, which we worked in a bipartisan fashion to make sure that is accessible to everyone.
Erie County Election Commissioner Jeremy Zellner.
We have 37 sites across the county. They're universal. You could vote at any of them. Voters can start to vote during the weekday from noon to 9 and the weekends from noon to 6 p.m.
Early voting meant to encourage more people to participate in elections. Skeptics are concerned about fraud and cost. In Erie County alone, early voting is expected to cost anywhere between $2 and $3 million. A big newspaper merger in the works in northeastern Pennsylvania. Four papers in Lackawanna, Wayne, and Pike counties will be joining forces as one starting next month. The change affects readers of the Carbondale News, the Moscow Villager, the Wayne Independent, and the News Eagle in Pike County. The oldest of those papers started way back in 1878. The brand new Tri-County Independent will put out its first newspaper the first week of October. Western New York State Senator Robert Ort hosted a hearing yesterday on the public health impact of wind farms.
If you live in a rural community, you will see more of these projects because the goals as outlined by Governor Cuomo, it's going to mandate essentially more wind projects to meet the demand from New York State residents.
The hearing happened at the Erie County Community College in Williamsville. A number of residents complained about the noise emitted from those towering turbines and how it affects their overall sleep hygiene. A plan in Pennsylvania to allow Sunday hunting, well, that's running into some opposition. Family Life's Terry Diener.
Game and Fisheries Committee Chairman Keith Gillespie says after a contentious informational meeting in Harrisburg, supporters will need to engage in some damage control if they hope to sell the bill. The state Senate voted back in June to permit hunting on one Sunday during deer rifle season, one during deer archery season, and on a third Sunday. Pennsylvania has long banned Sunday hunting, although there are exceptions for crows, foxes, and coyotes. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. The annual battle among toy elites has returned to the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York. This morning, 12 finalists were announced for the class of 2019. They include Care Bears, The Coloring Book, Fisher-Price Corn Popper, Jenga, Masters of the Universe, Matchbox Cars, My Little Pony, and Nerf Blaster. The toys represent the wide scope of play, everything from the simple spinning top to the ultra-modern smartphone. Fans can cast their votes online for finalists through September 18th. The winners will be announced November the 7th at the Toy Hall of Fame. It's 13 past the hour. The two-minute drill is next in sports with Sonny Delfiette.
Yeah, start that wild game in Philadelphia between the Braves and the Phillies. Scott Kingery going deep, or did he?
Out to center field. That's well hit. Acuna is going back to the fence. Does he have a chance? He jumps, and he dropped the ball. It's kicked around.
We better get it. Kingery's
to 13 feet home. The throw to the point by
turns out to be an inside-the-park home run. Phillies win 6-5. The Phillies are two games out of the National League wild card. Battle of the Zacks, Wheeler against Galen in Flushing, and Wheeler wins. Mets beat the Diamondbacks 3-2. Todd Frazier says they have to focus on themselves as they're three games out of the National League wild card.
Just worrying about us. Just worrying about us. We can't really control everybody else. We're playing really good teams that are involved, and especially Arizona. They're right there, so... got to win games.
Brewers also fighting for a wild card spot, but they'll do it without their star.
Yelich crumbles to the ground after fouling one off his foot.
Turns out it was a big injury. Reigning National League MVP Christian Yelich out for the season with a fractured right kneecap in that Brewers 4-3 win. And Detroit, the Tigers surrendered 6 home runs, still beat the Yankees 12-11 in the bottom of the 9th inning. Ouch! In Minneapolis, the Twins shut out the Nationals 5-0. Rocco Baldelli on Mitch Garver's home run.
He just looks for a good pitch to hit regardless of what's going on, and that's what he did. He found a good pitch and
he's been having really good at-bats. I mean, let's just call it what it is. I mean, he's been great for us, and he's come up big for us many, many times, and this is just another example of what he's been doing. He does thrive in those situations.
Indians trying to keep pace, knocking off the Angels 8-0. The Indians are a half game out of the American League wild card. In Toronto, Blue Jays knock off the Red Sox 4-3. The Giants hold off the Pirates 5-4 in San Fran. And the Dodgers' seventh consecutive National League West title is secure after they beat the Orioles 7-3. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiet.
Thank you kindly, Sonny. Still to come on this midweek edition of the Noon Report, Republicans win in North Carolina, 18 years since the terror attacks, and Rachel's challenge making a huge difference in Elmira, New York.
The latest release of our new video series, What Would You Say, is out, and it wanders into some difficult territory. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. It's inevitable. Someone, maybe your kids, maybe a coworker, maybe crazy Uncle Bob at Thanksgiving, is going to ask you a tough question about your faith or your Christian convictions. When Christians don't know how to answer a tough question, they risk making one of two mistakes. Either they stay silent or they get angry. Here's a better approach. If you don't know how to answer a question, say, "Well, what a great question. I don't know off the top of my head. Let me look into it and get back to you." And then look into it and get back to them. After all, you can find answers. They're out there. And a new series of short videos aims to make them even more available, accessible, and shareable than ever before. It's called What Would You Say? Each and every one of the videos answers a tough question in an understandable, trustworthy, and memorable way. Today's release is surrogacy just like adoption. Now, in light of our commitment to personal freedoms, the legalization of commercial surrogacy in Seattle, the push of same-sex couples to have children, and the exploitation of women in developing nations, this has become a very important and is a very difficult question. So here's Katie Faust with a What Would You Say response.
Proponents of third-party reproduction, especially contract surrogacy, will often argue that it's just another form of adoption. But is that true? Here are three reasons why third-party reproduction is not like adoption. First, adoption seeks to mend a family wound. Third-party reproduction creates a family wound. Adoption is a necessity born of brokenness. Before a child can be adopted, they must first lose their biological family. Many adoptees describe a primal wound that their adoptive parents have helped them work through. Donor conception is also born of brokenness because a child is separated from one or both parents. But in the case of donor-conceived children, the parents raising them participated in creating their wound. Second, with adoption, the child is the client. But with third-party reproduction, the adult is the client. The purpose of adoption is to make sure that children have parents. Therefore, the adoption process is built around the best interest of the child. Adoptive parents undergo screenings and background checks and receive post-adoption supervision. In adoption, the adults sacrifice for the kids. The goal of third-party reproduction is to make sure adults have a child, so the process is built around the best interest of the adults. It lacks the safeguards of adoption and often separates a child from one or both biological parents. In third-party reproduction, the child sacrifices for the adult. Third, with adoption, adults support the child. With third-party reproduction, children support the adults. In both adoption and third-party reproduction, children experience loss. But adoptive parents can better support children through the loss. That's possible because adoptive parents didn't cause the trauma. However, with third-party reproduction, children are living with the adults responsible for their missing parent. Expressing their loss means condemning the decisions of the adults who are raising them. That means donor-conceived children are more likely to suppress their feelings or feel guilty for having them in the first place. So, it's the child who must be understanding and accommodating and supportive of the adults.
That's just a brief sample of today's What Would You Say video. Come to whatwouldyousay.org. That's whatwouldyousay.org. And be sure to subscribe so you'll receive an update every single time a new question is answered. Again, that's whatwouldyousay.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
We're coming up on 20 past the hour. Summer weather out there today. Let's get the forecast with meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon to all. Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Warm and humid, varying amounts of clouds and sunshine, a shower or a thunderstorm in spots with high temperatures near 80. Tonight into tomorrow, rather cloudy, a couple of showers and a few rumbles of thunder. Low tonight, 60s, the high tomorrow, 70s, as skies begin to clear in the afternoon from the north for some sun. On Friday, it's a mix of clouds and sunshine, but cloudy near Lake Erie with a shower and high temperatures in the 70s.
All right, Kevin, thank you kindly. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Thanks for checking in today. Here's what's happening this Wednesday afternoon, September 11th, 9/11. And there were moments of silence observed as Americans reflected on 18 years since the terrorist attacks. President Trump spoke at the Pentagon this morning.
For every American who lived through that day, the September 11th attack is seared into our soul.
Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani says in many ways it feels like 9/11 just happened yesterday. And at other times it feels like 100 years ago.
The strange thing is a lot of the emotion doesn't go away when you get confronted with it. You don't remember it as often now, 18 years later. But when you do remember it, in some ways, it's more powerful.
Correspondent Adriana Diaz was a student in Lower Manhattan when those planes slammed into the Twin Towers. She went back today to talk to some of her former classmates.
I was staring out at the window, and I literally saw a flash and the first explosion.
Do you guys remember the building shaking?
Oh, yeah.
The lights flickered.
The lights flickered, yeah.
That's when we saw the dust cloud coming, and that was scary.
And again this morning, the names of the dead were read aloud in Lower Manhattan. There were also somber ceremonies at the Pentagon and the Flight 93 Memorial in Pennsylvania. Vice President Mike Pence was there, praising the heroes of Flight 93. He cited their courage and sacrifice by fighting back.
Their lives would be over. They would enter eternity. But not before they had earned a place of honor in the annals of American history and in the hearts of every American.
Now to North Carolina, where Republicans won two special elections in House races last night. In the 9th Congressional District, Dan Bishop scored a two-point win over his Democratic opponent. He says of the voters,
they said no to the harassment, obstruction, and impeachment mob that wants to undermine this country's success for their own power.
President Trump won that North Carolina district by 12 points in 2016. For the fourth time in his presidency, Donald Trump's looking for a new national security advisor. The end came yesterday for John Bolton after he clashed with Mr. Trump on such hot-button topics as Afghanistan and North Korea. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says world leaders should not worry about American foreign policy.
I don't think any leader around the world should make any assumption that because someone of us departs, that President Trump's foreign policy will change.
The final straw for John Bolton came over the weekend when he criticized the president's decision to invite the Taliban to Camp David. The president later rescinded the invite. After a tumultuous offseason, an NFL superstar facing some serious accusations.
Antonio Brown is gone! Touchdown!
Brown charged with sexual assault by a former trainer who claims he attacked her three times over 2 years. The NFL's looking into it. Reporter Stephanie Goss.
Roger Goodell, the head of the NFL, has his discretion whether or not he allows Antonio Brown to play. He's allowed to reprimand him, given his authority, taking him essentially off of the active list.
The news came just a day after Brown signed a multi-million dollar deal with New England. He wound up with the Pats after wearing out his brief welcome in Oakland. Today is World Suicide Prevention Day. Every 40 seconds on planet Earth, somebody takes their own life. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people.
For us, this is a battle that we fight every day.
Keith Leahy with the Mental Health Association of the Southern Tier says suicide prevention is everybody's business.
Be aware, be mindful. It takes a community to address suicide, and, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity to you know, reduce suicide rates by being aware.
And that means noticing the signs of suicidal behavior.
Are they depressed? Is there more anxiety that's, you know, going on? You know, so what is their state and how might that be changing?
Leahy says you should never be afraid to confront a friend or a family member who is exhibiting signs of suicidal behavior. A California woman has been hospitalized with mercury poisoning after using a skin cream she bought in Mexico.
Officials say the poison was added to a name brand face cream after it was purchased, apparently because mercury has a reputation for helping to fade age spots. Problem is, it can also cause severe brain damage. Sacramento County Public Health Officer Olivia Casiri.
Once it crosses into the brain, the medication we have cannot pull it out.
And the 47-year-old victim, no word on her prognosis.
Correspondent Vicki Barker, it's 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report. Next up, it's another edition of Inside Out with Martha Menikis Foster. And today's topic, why Christians need to love on Muslims on this day of all days, the anniversary of 9/11.
It's been 18 years since that day we stood staring at our televisions.
Right when 9/11 happened, I remember feeling my own sense of anger, my own sense of outrage, and rightfully so. A horrible thing had happened, and there is a certain righteous indignation we might have over the actions or even over the certain people who have committed those actions.
Soon we knew the names of the 19 hijackers, but we didn't know right away that they were part of Al-Qaeda, or maybe even what that was. But we knew that the hijackers were from the Middle East. And for many Americans, that day, Muslims became the enemy.
The first thing I thought of was people I love. People I love who are still Muslims. Mm-hmm. And how are they going to be treated?
Violence against Muslims, or people mistaken to be Muslims, surged in the U.S. after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Abdul Murray, a lawyer and now a senior vice president of Ravi Zacharias Ministries, is a former Muslim. He had just launched his ministry at the time of the attacks, and churches began calling, asking how to relate to Muslims, how to reach out to them.
I saw churches extremely distrustful.
For some, their longtime Muslim co-workers and neighbors now seem suspicious, or maybe dangerous. But God's heart of mercy toward those who don't believe in him, well, it hadn't changed. It continued on, just like in the Bible's Old and New Testaments.
And I'll tell you this, a high percentage of the churches wanted to understand their Muslim neighbors better, not so they could understand their enemy, but so they could understand what Muslims think of Christians, how we can best reach out to them.
But some in the church thought the jihadists represented all Muslims.
Were there those who wanted to be angry and justify that anger? And during the Q&A, could I hear that? Yeah, absolutely, I could. But I'll tell you, there were so many people who actually wanted to reach out.
And that makes sense. People who follow Jesus know that God values the people he created.
From the beginning, every person, no matter what they say, think, believe, act, or whatever it might be, are made in God's image. That's their inherent value, given to them by the objective value giver.
And God extends mercy to those in his image, even those who oppose him. Murray points out the way God treated the people in the Old Testament account of Nineveh.
God loved people who were either directly hostile to his people and to his message, or who were just so woefully ignorant of it that they just didn't know any better.
Murray sees this in the Bible, but he also knows this to be true for other reasons. His own story is that God called him out of Islam and into a relationship with himself.
So how do I think God views Muslims? Mm-hmm. I think he views Muslims the same way he views everybody else, as those who are made in his image, who have fallen short of his glory because they have tried to live on their own strength. And he provides a savior who can say, I can save you from you. Mm-hmm. And it's up to Christians to actually offer that savior to them. They did it for me. It took me 9 years to accept it. Mm-hmm. But once I did, that's all I needed.
Murray's seen churches overcome distrust and anger and fear and greet the Muslims in their communities as neighbors.
I have seen churches live well because they've reached out to the mosques and said we can do some good work in the community together, or they just said, let's come together and talk about our differences based on a commonality. How do we have a commonality in terms of our moral views, but then let's talk about our fundamental differences.
Murray points out that neighborliness always includes both hospitality and risk. Yes, if we reach out, we might be rejected. But if we're not, we get the chance to follow the way of Jesus and live side by side with people who don't know him, offering our food and our talent and our treasure.
That's the beauty of it, is that we were once sinners who hated God and were brought into the family. Mm-hmm. That means if we're worthy enough to be sacrificed for, then who isn't?
If reaching out like this feels uncomfortable, I asked Abdul-Murray what questions we can ask each other that could move us to follow Christ into loving the Muslims around us.
What are you afraid of that keeps you from stepping outside the box? And then actually list them out. And then go and ask yourself this question. Are those fears addressed in the life of Jesus, in the Acts of the Apostles, and in the history of the church? And you'll find they are.
He also suggests we ask ourselves if we love the world the way Jesus loves the world. And if we do, or we want to, then we can think through the talents we can offer and the actions we can take to serve people in ways that breaks their image of how Christians love and behave.
Is there something you can do as a community, not just by yourself, but as a community of Christians, your local body of believers, mm-hmm. where you can reach out to someone who doesn't believe what you believe and just say, this is what neighborliness looks like to us. This is what hospitality is. We would love to learn from you. Would you like to learn from us? What's the risk? What do you have to lose? And the answer really is, in the end, if you have Jesus and you have salvation and you know how the book ends and you know where things go after this, mm-hmm. the answer is nothing. You literally have nothing to lose. Temporary dignity, temporary comfort, who cares? The eternal is what we have to gain.
Abdul-Murray has a lot more to say that can help us love the Muslims in our lives. You can hear about that and his upcoming book in our podcast of The Full Conversation. You'll find it at fln.org/insideout. I'm Martha Manikas Foster with Inside Out on Family Life.
All right, Martha, excellent work as always. Thank you very much. Inside Out comes your way Wednesdays during the Noon Report or online anytime. Just go to fln.org/news.
Well, good afternoon to all. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, a taste of summer across our region today is including warmth, humidity, some sunshine, and isolated shower and thunderstorm. The arrival of the cold front tonight and tomorrow morning will bring a couple more showers and rumbles and cooler air in its way. In forecast form for this afternoon, warm and humid, varying amounts of clouds and sunshine, a shower or a thunderstorm in spots with high temperatures near 80. Tonight into tomorrow, rather cloudy. Couple of showers and a few rumbles of thunder. Low tonight, 60s. The high tomorrow, 70s, as skies begin to clear in the afternoon from the north for some sun. On Friday, it's a mix of clouds and sunshine, but cloudy near Lake Erie with a shower and high temperatures in the 70s.
All right, Kevin Williams at the Weather Center. Thank you. Finally at noon, for the third year in a row, the Elmira, New York School District has introduced Rachel's Challenge to 7th graders.
I just think it starts planting that seed of kindness.
That's Elmira educator explaining the purpose to the program, which is to inspire students to replace bullying with acts of compassion.
Some of the things they did last year is they had a welcoming committee when new kids came to the school. At the end of the year, we did a no one sits alone at lunch. Somebody came in and they were sitting by themselves. They'd go sit with them.
All great stuff. This Elmira 7th grader says what she hopes will happen through Rachel's Challenge.
Follow the golden rule. Start a chain reaction.
You can't go wrong by following the golden rule. Rachel's Challenge, of course, named after Rachel Scott, one of the students killed at Columbine. To date, more than 23 million people around the world have heard Rachel's story, and officials say it's prevented at least 8 school shootings and saved over 500 kids from committing suicide. Way to go, Elmira, New York. And that's the world we live in, Wednesday, September 11th. 2019. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.